Welcome, everyone, to the Pop Culture Podcast by Fantastic Geek. My name is Matt. Joining me, as always, is Pete. Hello, Pete.
Hello, Matt. Hello, everybody. Hope your summer has been a big hit to this point.
Indeed, Pete. The calendar has now turned to July, and we turn to another episode of Star Wars Rebels in our commentary track, Watch Along, Review, Look Back at the First Season. Today, is it really the seventh episode already? Out of Darkness.
And into the light.
Indeed. Well, we have it all prepped and ready to go. Just the first shot there of the nighttime sky appearing blue because it's Lothal, so whatever. And Pete, are you ready?
I am.
And for those of you watching along, we're going to go on go. 3, 2, 1, boom. And Out of Darkness, underway.
So, high-paced beginning here. We've got the TIE fighter in pursuit of the Phantom. All part of the plan. Kanan nowhere in sight.
Clearly on Lothal, as you could tell by the design of the mounds.
Yes.
Nothing will please me more if we have planetary variety in Season 2, although I know it was only a week or two ago, Pete, that there was the Season 2 movie premiere, which I guess we'll be reviewing at the end of this first season, so we'll save discussion on that for later. But I know that was Lothal-oriented, so time will tell.
Matt, would it be fair to say you loathe Lothal?
I loathe all the time we spend on Lothal. I don't loathe Lothal in and of itself.
I will say this in fairness, though we're mighty tethered to one locale through much of the first season, as the stories get increasingly stronger, you mind it a whole lot less.
Yes, I think that's wonderfully, wonderfully put.
I'd like a little bit of explanation as to what these, geological formations are. These, like, outside stalagmite, whatever ones come from the ground.
Well, Pete, I'm thinking of some of those more boxy vertical shapes in the American Southwest, which are some sort of harder rock as the softer soil and rock around it over the millennia. And millennia on millennia were slowly ground down. So perhaps it's that. And I think now, Pete, is a good time to announce our new podcast for the fall. We're going to give up Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. instead do geological configurations in TV and film, in which we talk about how various geological formations are created in both fictional and non-fictional presentations in the visual medium. I'm very excited about it.
Looking forward to it. Oh, we got a leak, Matt. That they'll pay for that somewhere in the second act.
That's not how that docks.
It can go either way, Matt.
I guess so. I'd like to know how they got out, since that is not an exit. The front of the Phantom is not an exit. No double entendre there. I believe wholeheartedly in the right for Hera as the owner of this ship. She can dock the Phantom any way she wants. That is her right as an individual, and I support that. And though the Phantom and the Ghost, they can conjoin in any way that works for them. I'm just saying, how are those three people going to get out of the Phantom?
Well, we know they can't beam them out, so they'll figure something.
Pete, seeing them drinking whatever drink they are.
It's space coffee, Matt.
The space coffee. I will tell you that a couple of weeks ago, middle of June, was when Star Wars Weekends concluded at Disney World. And I saw an article that at one of the restaurants at Hollywood Studios, they were serving blue milk shakes.
Yeah, well, when you go in to get your space coffee, Matt, where do you get it?
I don't know.
Starbucks, of course. Oh. When you go into your Starbucks, you can get the blue milk in your space coffee.
Now, Pete, at the Starbucks, is it true that some of the baristas are actually angels?
Not only angels, some of them are Twi'leks and Mon Calamarans. There's a diversity initiative. In fact, there had been a program to discuss your alien species with the baristas.
Is it true that some of the baristas at Starbucks were never there at all? And when you turn away for a minute to double check the menu, they're suddenly gone.
That I can't speak to.
See, Pete, I'm mixing the genres of science fiction here.
Oh, but wait. That thing that happened before that's we're not going to be able to notice, that's going to get us in some hot water.
It is a mild, I don't want to say story baloney, because everything presented here is a logical step from one to the next to the next to the next. It's just not the most complex writing to do it like this.
Yeah, the conceit that there's something wrong with the shuttle is fine, that they miss it through the grab-assery of riding Chopper and beating each other up for what? The second time in four episodes?
They are those three. They are brothers from another mother. They are, I mean, in the family dynamic, those three are, they're the brothers that fight.
We just got an answer on your phantom docking from the front or docking from behind. There is a hatch on the bottom of the phantom.
Okay, fair enough. I somehow missed it as I was exploring the nature of family on Star Wars Rebels.
This is Fulcrum.
Now, Pete, am I correct in saying that that is Ashley Eckstein doing the voice? Is that correct?
I do not believe it is. When they run it through a harmonizer like that, Matt, Fulcrum would be best identified as a Janebow.
Why?
Because the male name for somebody run through a harmonizer is a Jimbo.
I thought that I had read somewhere that people took Fulcrum's Janebowed voice and ran it back through filters and made it sound like Ashley Eckstein, you know, within a week of this episode airing, and that the production was a little taken aback at how quickly people were like fairly definitively going, here's my YouTube video of in GarageBand, how I blah, blah, blah. And they're going, it's November. This isn't supposed to be revealed till the spring.
I think it was a very poorly held secret.
How interesting. To me, I thought it was a great secret.
We've got the leaking iridescent gas coming through now. So in the midst of our girl power pairing, things are about to get bad, Matt.
Pete, do you think that there's some sort of gender subtext here to say that the releasing of gas is not a ladylike thing, and that maybe we need to reassess gender types for decorum? Is that what the episode is really about here? Is that the darkness of the shackling of gender roles?
It's not gas, Matt, it's fuel, and that these two female characters fuel the buffoonery of our male members of the crew. They are the engine that drives this show. One being the pilot, the other being the engineer.
That was a phenomenal job that you just did, turning my my intellectual sounding fart joke into an affirmation of these two fantastic characters. You might say the two strongest characters on the show. I would be inclined. I mean, look, I enjoy both characters. I think Sabine is probably a little more standoutish than Hera. To my mind, anyway. Nice design of this place. I like that the asteroid field is so clear in the background. Mm-hmm. It's not just blue sky or purple sky or whatever.
And the lighting is evocative of some of the sets on Lothal. Here you very clearly got a Clone War aesthetic. You had a downed ARC 170 fighter from Revenge of the Sith. You have beat up and discarded Republic dropships, gunships here. So it really serves stories past and present.
Given that they must have known that a lot of your hardcore adult audience was going to be starting with a natural place of, I don't want to say quite dismissive, but they naturally were going to say, well, this isn't Clone Wars, sell me on this show. The fact that you've taken seven episodes to get to kind of a Clone Wars echo of sorts, it's smart on their part. Certainly one of the behind the scenes storylines for this season is needing to win over the audience that you needed most for this show.
These I believe they're called Phrynox, Matt. So we're in the Minocky type of thing. They kind of bear a resemblance to the Lothrats that we've seen on the surface of Lothal.
Indeed, kind of a design cousin. And they don't like the right bright light, they are saying. Now, Pete, if you feed those after midnight, what happens?
Nothing, as this was well before Gremlins.
Indeed, a long time ago, you might say.
In galaxy far, far away.
One would question how the Mogwai / Gremlins could travel such a long distance.
The antifreeze-ish color of the puddle outside of the Phantom right now, really, really cool. Yet subtle effect.
Oh, it's space music.
It is.
And the return of the milk cartons, yep, that were thrown.
He was eating space honeycombs there.
I wonder how the average kid, like, I wonder what their appreciation of Ezra is. Like, I think back to, you know, whatever the intended audience age is of this, that's probably the age I was when, like, Tailspin came out. I remember being like, oh, the boy in Tailspin, Kit was his name, Pete. Oh, he's interesting. But I was kind of more into the adult characters, even though I was like 10, because I felt like, I don't know.
I have to wonder how the prime time broadcast schedule of the show influences little kids in watching it. Not that they're not necessarily up, and we know of the digital nature of the consumption of this type of content, but you mentioned a Tailspin that you came home after school and was on five days a week.
Oh yeah.
You know, that this isn't available that way. Of course, on demand being the way, I get home, I watch it anytime. I don't have to wait till 3:30 to watch it.
Right. It is interesting to think how, I mean, there's no question that 13 or so episodes. How many episodes are there of Rebels when you include the first one as two?
11.
So then, not to go down this rabbit hole again, 12 when you include the four little mini episodes, you know, because that together they're about 20 minutes. Point being, it's better quality to have those 11 or 12 versus 64 in a season. But I, as a child of the 80s, I grew up with five new episodes a week of He-Man, then five new a week of Thundercats, then five new a week of Turtles, then five new a week of Tailspin. And you do these massive season one, 64 episodes, season two, 64 episodes, season three. All right, we think we're wrapping up here. We're only going to do like 30 episodes.
And it's amazing for the amount of content on TV, Matt, how few episodes shows actually produce.
And I certainly get, and please don't misunderstand listeners, I get how the quality of animation, frankly, the quality of storytelling in most of those 80s cartoons was nothing compared to this. If you're watching any of those shows as an adult now, it is for kitsch value. It's not because there's, as I've said previously, there's not kind of a G-rated adult story, you know, that exists.
And this being a little too dark for an afternoon serialized show, the shadows coming, these monsters coming out of it. Matt, this is Star Wars Pitch Black.
Yeah. It's interesting. It's an interesting beast that they have to deal with as we watch the characters deal with beasts. Like, how do you make this a show that's going to maximize viewers in terms of everybody from 5 years old to, you know, potentially 75? And what that means for requirements of a production of stories, etc. I mean, similarly, and kind of, you know, in our Marvel wheelhouse, I was reading an article that was saying, hey, Daredevil was great, but I just wasn't comfortable watching it with my 10-year-old. You know, yes, it's not R-rated, but the violence was just a little bit too much. And that's not a place I wanted to go now. In a couple of years, that's okay. So just kind of the notion there where it's like, well, there's a place, some of that Marvel TV stuff is not for kids. Here it's a similar problem of, or a problem in reverse, you know, how do we make sure that we get the adults watching?
The colors in this episode are so well executed and presented.
The colors of the wind, you might say. No, but you're right. The kind of rainbow gasoline iridescence really is quite nice.
And that this show realizes early on we can have an episode with just the girls and it can be as action-packed as anything and as desperate as anything as they've presented to this point in the series run.
And also, I mean, yes, these are kind of space creatures and yes, we don't feel for them because they're predators, but these are two ladies, each with two guns apiece, shooting and killing these creatures, you know, like it's Mango Tiger Hunt, you know, it's that, but just with women and gun and laser guns, you know, and that sort of thing.
Oh, Matt, it's the slingshot. It's back. Please, somebody make Matt a space slingshot cosplay thing that he can wear to New York Comic Con, because I will make him wear it.
It's you know what? I think it's evidence of, as a production, not fully knowing how kid-oriented you wanted things to be. I mean, you have Sabine. Like, how old is Ezra? Like, 13?
He's 34.
But, like, if Ezra is 13, 14, that makes Sabine 15, 16, which is a big difference if you're 13, but not a big difference really, you know. So here she is, two guns shooting these creatures. Meanwhile, he's doing like, I'm going to space snoozy you with my slingshot before I go whitewash the fence with Aunt Polly. Now, Pete, I'm having trouble remembering this episode. I know they're not leaving the Phantom, but it looks like they're leaving the Phantom. Or did they get the Phantom? I'm just confused now.
It's down on the ground there still.
That's what I thought. Pete, now you might be saying, hey, how could they send a shock through the glass window there? Fun fact, it's transparent aluminum.
It is, if you're in Star Trek.
Hello, computer.
I believe you're referring to transparasteel, which is a Star Warsian thing.
Maybe the Scots, as a family, hail from the Empire many millennia ago. We're all kind of sorry that we should have known better and we couldn't have written a slightly smoother edge to this story point. It definitely is to the credit of the episode that you have the two ladies are the ones executing themselves flawlessly, and all the problems come from the three dopey brothers.
I'm interested to see in season two the further appearance evolution. We've seen that Sabine has slightly longer, different colored hair, but that's really easy to notice. I want to see how Hera and Zeb are going to get a little bit more in terms of their evolution.
You mean in terms of character, design, or personality,
design.
Or both?
Design. Okay.
I think it's really smart for any show to kind of have that line of delineation where you say, this is the way they were, and now there's kind of no going back. Because you remember those earliest times most fondly, Boomer in the first season of Battlestar where there's no going back after you, well, do that thing at the end of the first season. I won't spoil it for people if you haven't watched the show from 12 years ago. The change in Ahsoka's costumes and costume in Clone Wars, it's nice to have that line of delineation. But Pete, you know what there is no line of delineation for in an effortless segue is the fact that people can always and continue to enjoy interacting with you on Twitter. And how can they do so?
You find me on Twitter at Peter, P-I-E-T-E-R, J-K-L-R, K-E-T-E-L-A-A-R, 5,887 followers. Can't be wrong.
And while I am personally on Twitter as Looking Back Lost, you can be in touch with the podcast in a variety of ways. We are Fantastic Geek. That is Fantastic with a PH. And you can say hello to us on the .com, the Twitter, and the Gmail, where we're all Fantastic Geek. But wait, Pete, there's more.
Get yourself over to facebook.com/Fantastic Geek, all one word with a PH, and prove you like us by clicking the like button.
If you don't, then the Inquisitor wins. With that, Pete, I will say adios to all our listeners until we meet again in the next Star Wars adventure and give you the final word.
What the f*** is a Phrynoch?